KSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples. Find us online at cjsf.ca and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. Today's show was originally broadcast on the 27th of July, 2017. It features Dr. Laura Shanner of Vancouver Island University. She talks about happiness.
Michael offered a couple of different topics and the idea of spending the evening talking about happiness and what that actually means and how we might achieve that kind of got me out of my near slumbers. So I'm really glad to be here.
You rejected my first topic, which was something about epistemology.
Yeah, that's just too big.
Too
a double
heady,
clutch
right?
on my brain. Well, I have to really double clutch the brain, and I don't have enough cells left to do that right now. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So
if we can stay in my wheelhouse, then I might actually get those cells to, you know, function tonight.
Maybe
yeah.
They'll multiply as we speak.
That would be amazing. I look forward to that.
Right.
I eat chocolate. That should help.
Yeah, you're really, your face
you
is
mean,
all lit
you
up.
You ate chocolate without us, and now you're telling us about it?
Yeah, well, you know, I had to walk the dogs. I have a 15-year-old dog who just doesn't go as quickly as she used to. So I kind of, you know, did my class, stayed for an hour and a half after class, dealing with some absences and a registration glitch and a couple of problems, and get home. Drag the dog around the block, feed the dogs, have some food, drag the dog around the block again.
And somehow, amongst all that, I convinced you to come.
Yeah. So, you owe me.
I owe you a discussion about happiness. And we'll forget the epistemology and the...
For today, we'll come back to it another
time. What about philosophy of mind? Can we do any of that?
Today?
Well, how about at least
it
to answer the...
It requires having a mind to
right.
talk about philosophy of mind.
Well, doesn't talking require having a mind?
Yeah, but I remember like what I said and as we were communicating on text messaging, as I got out of class, I said I'm just a half step ahead of fire, bad.
Okay.
So I have a few brain cells that are coming back online.
We don't need any more fires in BC.
We do not need more fires in BC. So,
we'll keep it cool and happy and
so
here,
yeah.
And light.
Well, you know what? I just might hijack this. Discussion.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Less than a week ago, it was actually Saturday, a friend of mine, a close personal friend of mine, chose to die with dignity.
Oh, my.
And I could not be there, which saddened me.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been watching the Facebook posts of the 30 plus some people mm-hmm. who gathered around him
oh.
at the time.
How lovely.
And yeah, and it was sad that he had to go, but it was beautiful that mm-hmm. he was able to have a choice of not to suffer through ALS.
Yeah.
Because he was a very functional man.
Yeah.
And to watch the Facebook posts talk about the joy of being the people that were there, the joy of being in his presence
yeah.
at the moment he decided
he
took to transition from the living to the
whatever's next.
Yeah,
and that's beautiful.
And I want to, and I know that you've done a lot of death.
We can talk about that tonight. That actually. Is a very powerful inroad.
And that actually has created a type of happiness for me this week.
It does. It does. Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Before you continue, I just wanted to interject and give the phone number.
Yes.
Because we always like it when people call. And if I give the phone number a couple times now, then it'll give you a chance to get your courage up and call. And there's really no risk. There's no... Not high stakes. You can call in and say
yeah.
whatever you want. And Dr.
We'll work with it.
Laura is. And we're very accepting of any viewpoint. And our number then is 250-740-1017. 250-740-1017. And I'm also monitoring our Gmail account. You can ask a question, make a comment on Gmail, and I'll get it right away. It's forwardviu@gmail.com. That's forward, V as in Victor, I as in India, U as in uniform.
Or as Vancouver Island University.
Right.
Duh.
I'm an old ham radio operator, so I have to give that, you know, the correct phonetic. Forward, V-I-U at gmail.com. Okay, so take it away.
Okay, so I'm so glad you brought that up. Thank you for sharing that, Catherine. Most people in our dominant culture we have such a distance from death as a concept and experience, and a lot of fear. And of course, there's the grief of my going on in my world without somebody who I loved in this world with me, that I miss them. And so there's that sadness. But our dominant culture does a really kind of lousy job of talking about the fact of our mortality and the end of our lives. And it's really been my experience for a lot of years. And I've had some terrific mentors along the way. I've been very lucky. That if we can get past the fear, then it's possible that the last episode of our lives can be lived, and we can make that passage with real joy and contentment, and according to the values that were so important to us through the rest of our lives. I was taught the first person who I was present as they passed was a 2.5-year-old little boy. And the doctor who was in my graduate class in bioethics at Georgetown, he was my mentor for this. And what he taught me was, there are times that, you know, death is it just happens. This is not actually negotiable. As much as we would want to not have it come soon, it will come sometime, and that's reality. And so the assumption that we should always reject it or always fight it is going to leave us exhausted, and we'll end up losing. And what he taught me is, there is this incredible gift that we can offer to each other to make this passage better than it may otherwise have been, because it will happen anyway. So we can do it with trauma, or we can do it with comfort. We can do this with loneliness and despair, or we can do this surrounded by people we love. We can grieve the end of life, but we can also celebrate a life lived. And that was very powerful for me. And so, you know, it's interesting. You've kind of got a little bit of tear in your eyes, and I'm feeling it welling up in mine, thinking about a few episodes that I've been involved in. And yet, there's something incredibly profound in this. There is something that is so deeply calming in my experience, that a lot of so much of the fluff and tumble of a typical day, and, you know, so much of it doesn't actually matter. But you know, when we have this opportunity to get real and to get serious, I think our better selves can come out. There's the depth of who you are is called upon in moments like this. And it's kind of strange when I say a couple of the things that I have been most proud of myself, the times that I have felt most anchored and whole, have actually been when I've been involved in someone's passing. And that's not kind of a normal thing for people to say. But if you've had that experience, you know, it kind of rings true that there's, if we can manage to be present and really to celebrate what good we can bring, and to make this part of somebody's life as good as we can make it, then, yeah, what an amazing thing to offer to the person who is passing. What an amazing way to show support for the loved ones left behind. that everyone's able to say their goodbyes and do what they need to do, and to be able to reduce the trauma. For a lot of people, the dying process is really, really difficult, and it doesn't always have to be that bad. There are things we can do, and so having started from let's talk about happiness, this kind of situation and having this conversation, I realized, you know, my whole tone and demeanor are very different now from when I bounced into the studio.
Isn't that because the chocolate's gotten into your bloodstream?
That would be the bouncing part. And I'm more subdued now. But if you ask me, you know, how do I feel? I think I can honestly say I feel more genuinely happy at this moment than I did earlier, precisely because it's deeper.
And if you would ask me if I feel happy, I would have to say I'm not happy, but I have this sense of contentment.
Yeah.
This sense of quiet joyfulness.
Yeah.
This sense of fulfilled happiness, yes.
Yeah, and I think that's it. That, you know, there, it's kind of flippant to say, you know, I want to be happy. And the interesting philosophical question is, you know, what exactly do we mean by happiness? And
that's a good question.
Yeah.
Well, is what we're experiencing now, or what you guys say you're experiencing, is it similar to what churchgoers might experience after a church service?
Maybe. And I mean, it depends. There's sort of the jazzed up mountaintop experience, which is, it's more the revelation, the losing of self in something bigger kind of experience, and that's another, a different shade of it.
Or could it be the experience of coming to terms with or finding a way to cope with fear of the unknown?
Well, I think it's even beyond coping with fear. I think it's that that even though there has been fear or angst around the topic of someone's passing or a particular someone I care about passing, there's this other sense that everything is actually okay in the universe. Things unfold, and you know, I kind of prefer the roller coaster ride going wee and laughing and having a good time, and yet that is so passing and so temporary. And, you know, excitement is wonderful, but burns itself out. There's this whole other thing that, you know, that you tapped into with your friend's situation, that there's something much more sustaining there. Mm. And I can go back and remember really exciting things, and I don't feel that same kind of joyfulness that I felt at the time. It's gone. But I can go back to this little boy whose path crossed mine nearly 30 years ago, and I'm brought right back to the, there's a solidness. And it's something that there's a solidness inside us that I think it's usually there, but we sometimes bury it under a lot of other stuff. And I think we have some false ideas, you know, that happiness involves having more things or having more excitement, or that it's something that comes from outside us. And I think there has been a lot of tradition in philosophy saying it, you know, if you're looking for something outside of you to make you happy, it probably won't work, or it certainly won't work for long.
Okay.
But when there are things deep inside of us, our deepest, truest selves, and that best part of you is called upon to come out, and you realize just how deep you actually are capable of going, that feels amazing.
Okay,
so, yeah, it's not cheerfulness, but it is a kind of contentment.
At this point, I want to be the dissenter. Do we allow dissent here?
Well, yeah. Well, you know, since when have you and I agreed on
that? I took a class with you.
Yeah, I know.
Did you ever experience
me
being...
Did we ever agree on anything?
Was I ever... did I ever dissent?
Constantly.
Okay. Did I ever agree?
Not often.
Okay. So so then it would not be unprecedented for me to be the fly in the ointment right now, right?
I don't think he's happy.
Oh, I'm happy being myself, right?
Bring it on.
So I'm going to be myself. Okay. I'm a materialist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that there is anything after death. I think that there is no soul that lives on.
Okay.
That your mind is identical to your body.
Okay.
And when your body's gone, your mind's gone, your soul's gone, everything's gone. If there was ever a soul.
Yeah.
So having said that, then I'm hearing terms like passing to whatever's next as euphemisms, or if you actually believe that
you could be passing into nothingness. That's an option on the table.
That's a reasonable answer.
I'll grant that.
Right. But when you say to whatever's next, what I'm hearing is either a euphemism being used because of a reluctance to accept the nothingness that happens after death, and or a way of rationalizing and making oneself feel better about the probability or the certainty of death.
Yeah, okay, I hear where you're going. And
I'm being the devil's advocate, right?
Yeah,
I'm saying, is this happiness that we're experiencing now actually a way of rationalizing and avoiding really confronting the finality of death?
Well, let me put it this way. I'm going to claim official agnosticism about what, if anything, is on the other side.
Okay.
Okay, ceasing to exist in any form is a perfectly logical possibility, as is evolving into something different or who knows what. So I don't have answers to that, and I'm not even going to try. So, yeah, we can just say the person died rather than the person passed. Whatever is on the other side of this lifetime, or being alive in any form, whatever this is. And if this is it, this is it. The fact remains that, you know, whether there's some other kind of level of existence or nothingness, death is still part of this mortal human lifetime. So it doesn't change the fact that that end point is going to come. And as the body winds itself down, it tends to be really unpleasant. And some people have hopes and beliefs about some place to go or some other existence to move into. Some people believe it's the end of everything. Again, I'm going to withhold judgment here. But my point is, whatever it is that happened for Catherine's friend after the last breath, Catherine and I are still in this lifetime reflecting on the loss of that person's life.
Okay.
And so, yeah, whether that person is happy in some other existence or not, I can't say.
I can't say.
I'm not going to go there because I don't know. But what I can say is my existence is actually enriched by being present with somebody at the end. I don't have to have any other kind of concept of self or soul or afterlife or God, the universe, and anything. I'm just saying, you know, here is Laura living my life, my 60 and whatever years, hopefully. There are of the things that have truly enriched my life, oddly enough, some of the most important have been people dying. And that's the thing, that it's not about what exactly happened to them in the dying. It's about what is called upon from us to be present for that and to engage. I mean, it calls into question our own mortality as well.
An existentialist might say that the possibility of our death, and sometimes we use the term an existential
Yeah.
Philosophy, we use the term possibility of. I don't know what.
Right.
I mean, it seems like a certainty in a logical sense. But,
well,
but possibility.
Yeah, there is a right. definite yeah. death, whether it's
right.
an end of all forms of you death
right,
or
right, right.
some
but anyway,
transition. Yeah.
And I know in existentialist philosophy, usually we say the possibility of one's death.
Yeah.
Possibility of our own death creates an urgency about becoming authentic and finding meaning in life.
Exactly.
So I'm asking if what you're saying is the same, or are you saying something different? I guess my concern is that if we entertain illusions about, and I know you've said that you don't know that this is the case, you're not making a claim one way or the other, but to the extent that somebody, maybe not you, might maintain a story, which I'm claiming is very likely an illusion, about some existence after
right.
the
okay.
physical body dies. Doesn't that create less of a, how do you say it, less of a motivation to find meaning in this life? To find, to
be
authentic.
For some people it does.
Right.
I think, yeah, I do think that some people are kind of banking so much on the next life being different and better or something that it becomes hard to stay focused on this life. And so I think you're right that if death is perceived as finality, and even if there is some kind of afterlife, this life achieves a finality. It does have a way of focusing the mind that, yeah, our time here is actually limited and therefore precious. And where we can whittle away our time on nonsense, or we can find some truly deep and sustaining parts of ourselves. And, you know, whether that has any eternal lasting anything or whether it disappears along with my last breath, I don't know. But it sure was good while I was breathing, is my point. So, yeah, I used to wrestle a lot with theological questions that I've kind of, for me, I've reached a place that I've realized I won't figure it out. And I got really angry about that for a while. And then I kind of got over it and said, well, I'm not going to figure out. And so I'm just not going to let myself worry about it so much. But yeah, I do kind of find that disengaging, there's something, I mean, some people talk about it as being in the moment or being truly present in the moment. And we find all these really interesting ways to imagine things other than they are, or future possibilities that aren't here yet, or we get stuck in the philosopher's game and we forget to actually live our lives in an authentic way. And that, so, you know, yeah, I find the existentialist kind of appealing at that level.
I'm not sure, though, that it would be accurate to say that in the moment would describe the existentialist way of thinking. I think
existentialism
as more about being authentic,
yeah,
and finding meaning in one's life and rejecting scripts and rejecting
yeah.
prefabricated ways of thinking
right.
and living.
Rejecting
and
the even, imaginings.
And even to, you might not like it, but even perhaps morality that comes from external sources.
From external sources, right. It's yeah, but if all you're doing is waddling behind someone or something like a little baby duck, that's what the existentialists complain about, and it's my observation that tends to be pretty unsatisfying.
Right.
And so the question then is, how do we tap into that deeper, more authentic self and how do I bring that Laura out to play every day,
right,
rather than the Laura who gets distracted with forgetting to pay the electric bill, or the Laura who's, you know, hurrying her 15-year-old dog along the sidewalk because the clock says. How do I get back to being, you know, this is the powerful understanding of who I am and how I fit into my world, even if I'm really incomplete about all of that. Or my understandings are inadequate, can I at least find my real self? And so there are things that are truly powerful that, you know, sometimes it kind of shakes you to your core. I mean, the birth of a baby is amazing to watch or to go through, being present at death. is, I don't know what it's like to go through, but it's pretty life-altering if you're able to be present rather than, you know, be in the room and shut it out. There are some experiences that kind of strip away the nonsense and get us back to, this is what it means to be human. This is what it means to be in relationship with somebody. This is what it means to have something actually matter.
And this can be one of the components of happiness.
I think it's the heart of it.
Of a higher level happiness, or
absolutely.
A deeper happiness.
The deeper happiness, yeah, absolutely.
As distinct from, say, the pleasure machine.
Yeah, the pleasures are lovely. I have nothing against pleasures. I'd like more of them. But they are fleeting. And there are lots of pleasures that, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time, and afterwards you just, you know, you've gorged on the Halloween candy and then feel sick for hours.
Right.
And it's just, it backfires.
Right, but, so that brings to mind a question I want to bring up. But first I just want to say that you are listening to Spring Forward, the Vancouver Island University Philosophy Radio Show. We're here in Nanaimo, BC. And our phone number in the studio, if you want to call in. We don't seem to get a lot of callers. I hope we have anyone listening.
I hope so.
I'm sure we do.
Don't be afraid to call.
We love callers.
But if you don't feel like calling, we respect that
decision,
too.
You can just listen.
But we love to have you listen.
And so the number, if you want to call, is 250-740-1017. The toll-free number is 855-740-1017. So, Laura, I was thinking about the distinction between authenticity, sort of in the existentialist sense, and on one hand, and on the other hand, living in the moment. So when I hear people say living in the moment, I often hear it in the context of irresponsibility. A sense of, well, I'm just going to smoke and drink and party.
Oh, no.
Well, I know, but I want to make that distinction.
Yeah.
Well, I know that's not what you're saying, but some of our listeners might be thinking, oh, great.
Woohoo!
I have permission now to go to the bar and stay up all night and drink and drive and live for the moment and smoke cigarettes and do all these things.
Yeah, no, that's not it.
A lot of people will say, I'm just living in the moment. Why are you criticizing me for living in the moment? I don't even know there's going to be a tomorrow. Why not just enjoy life now and do whatever I want? So how do we make that distinction between the two,
when I say being in the moment, I'm thinking something more in a Buddhist tradition of being calmly present, and it's a different form of authenticity. And so, something like a focus on breath meditation, or there are various exercises one might do, but it's the attempt to get those little jangly distractions in our brains to calm down for a little bit so that we can get more in touch with what's underneath and what is authentic. And so again, it's, you know, my brain is buzzing with the to-do list and the things I didn't get done and I must remember and the, oh, rats, I'm really upset at myself for whatever. And so much of that is either it's in the past or it's in the future, but right in this moment, who is Laura? What is going on? What actually matters right now? And so it's not that superficial. If I can calm down, I'm not interested in the superficial woohoo moment. You know, it's there's something, if I can get my brain to stop distracting me long enough, I can recognize that there are some really important aspects of myself, my world, my relationships, my awareness, that if I can just clear some of the clutter so that the good stuff can come out more easily, then you start seeing that authentic part of yourself. And
And I think a lot of people get something like that by being connected with nature.
Absolutely.
If I'm feeling completely out of touch with myself, best thing I can do,
go walk in the woods.
Get on my mountain bike, go riding up in the woods.
Yep. And this is it. And again, getting rid of a lot of the jangly, shiny distractions and being fairly quiet about it, right? I mean, the walk in the woods is perfect, sitting by the waterfall, riding the bike, whatever. It's that you're tuning out the stuff that distracts us, so then what becomes present to your awareness is the stuff that's always going to be there, that more real self. And so I think different philosophies, different techniques, different religions have different phrases for it, have different methods for trying to get at it. But I think they're getting at similar things. There's something, if we strip away all the other stuff,